Well, I think we should try that applause one more time. Thank you. PhDs are good. PhDs are better. That's basically the way I see the gathering in this room today. My friend Beth Bubis, she was right mostly about my bank not being very smart, by the way. I want to thank you, my friend Claudia Vick from San Francisco, the Bay Area, really brilliant lady who does incredible work, doing well by doing good, who most recently we had dinner together and Bob Gnezda, and she gave me a original picture of my hero, Martin Luther King Jr. She had in her personal collection for over 25 years as a gift from her heart tonight. Thank you, Claudia. Raise your hand. Before I say anything else, I want to tell you that Karen Gotzler of Urban Strategies wants you to know that all of the six groups that you're going to go tour are either African-American or Latino organizations that raise money and work very hard to have you visit them, and she is encouraging you all to get on the bus. As you'll hear from my remarks, there is no more important thing than showing up. There is no more important thing than showing up. You know, it's a beautiful day outside. I don't know if you had a chance to go outside here in Milwaukee today, but it is a beautiful, beautiful day. Given the weather cycles here, you should really, really celebrate. But who would know the world is changing based on the way it looks outside? And who would know that the world is changing mostly based on the people in here? But before I get into that, I've got to say one thing about my host and my friend Beth. Beth called me and she said, "John, do you believe in America?" "Hi, Beth, I haven't talked to you in years. How are you doing?" "John, do you believe in America's Constitution?" "Beth, I'm sure this is a long-distance phone call for one of us." "John, if you believe in America's Constitution, do you believe in your constitutional rights?" "Beth, I'm black. My mother and father worked hard and fought their entire lives for their constitutional rights." "Well, John, if you believe in your constitutional right, do you believe in your right to free speech?" "Beth, I can't remember your name anymore. You just please just get on with it. Will you believe, John, if you believe in your constitutional right to free speech, will you come give one?" And so, so I am here. Believe me, I try to say no, and you know, I try to do the caller ID thing, and Beth just does not give up. She's all over you like a cheap suit, and she doesn't wear cheap suits. But I really thought this was an important thing to do. I thought you were an important audience to talk to. And I believe that love is work, non-love is laziness, and anti-love is evil. People say you can't define love. Yes, you can. It's only when mankind wants to complicate life, thus giving themselves an excuse for doing nothing, that we find definitions that are too complicated to discern. But what do we say that love was work, non-love was laziness, and anti-love is evil? You love your children, sometimes you want to strangle them, but you love them and so you don't. You love your job, or you love the thing that your job allows you to do, so you deal with all of the drama and the trauma in life. You cannot have a rainbow without a storm first. It's a scientific fact that you cannot have a rainbow without a storm first. I'm always intrigued by the book, The Road Less Traveled by Scott Peck. Been on the bestseller list for 22 years. First line, first sentence, first page of this book states, "Life is difficult. Translation. If you can't get with that statement, don't read the rest of the book. Because nobody promised you a rose garden. Nobody promised you that life is going to be free of grief or pain. You say that you're an entrepreneur, or some would say a social entrepreneur, then you must understand this. An entrepreneur is somebody who works 18 hours a day to keep from getting a job. I'm using some of my best stuff on you this morning, and some of you just sitting there. So the coffee's in the back around the left. Love is work, non-love is laziness, anti-love is evil. It's 3 a.m, you're on the equivalent of Pacific Coast Highway. Actually, you live, let's make it difficult, thank you. 20 minutes away from Pacific Coast Highway in California. Your friend calls you at 3 a.m. and says they're stuck on PCH. They've got a flat tire. You say, don't you have AAA? He hangs up the phone, you go back to sleep. They call you back. And they say, no, I don't have AAA. You say, well, where's your mama and your daddy? Now, during the day, you say, where's your mother and your father? But you've lost all couth because it's 3 a.m. Where's your mama and your daddy? Where's your best friend? Where's the person that you invited to go to the club with you last week because it wasn't me? Where's the person you had in your wedding last year because it wasn't me? And then once you get through all of that drama, what do you do? I'm sorry, I'm from the black church. I'm used to it. Let me try this once again. It's a free speech. Y'all better participate. I'm here to talk with you and not at you. So it's 3 a.m. You've gone through all the excuses. What do you do? You get up and go get your friend cursing under your breath every step of the way. With those little hush puppies on and the rollers in your hair and hoping nobody sees you. Love is work, non-love is laziness, and anti-love is evil. And so, out of love, we do this work. We also understand that no good deed shall go unpunished. We also understand that success is going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. Thank you. There's a man that understands value. All right, let's go another route. Let's go deep. What if I told you that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s father was a founder of Citizens Trust Bank in Atlanta, Georgia? I'm sorry, grandfather. Let's go really deep. And what if I told you that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dad, Martin Luther King Sr., served on the board of that bank until the day he died? What if I told you that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had civil rights and silver rights in his blood? What if I told you that in 1968, the year that Dr. King was assassinated, he called for a new movement in America? He called for the Poor People's Campaign. It was about poor blacks, poor whites. There's more poor whites in America than poor anybody else. Poor Latinos, poor Indians, poor African Americans, poor Asians, moving them all up the economic ladder because he realized, and I quote, you cannot legislate goodness and you cannot pass a law to force someone to respect you. And the only way to social justice in a capitalist country is through economic parity. I knew you guys would applaud. That was Dr. King. If you don't applaud for that, you won't applaud for anything. But that was an exact quote from Dr. King in 1968, the same year he was cut down by bullets. Now, Dr. King was not assassinated because of his position on civil war, on the civil rights movement. He wasn't assassinated because of his position on Vietnam. But 3 weeks before the March on Washington, when a Nobel Peace Prize winner known for mobilizing millions of Americans, talked about in the biblical sense of redistribution of wealth, is assassinated 3 weeks before his first march on Washington for the Poor People's Campaign. When I talked to my hero, Ambassador Andrew Young, he said, "John, you know, the real irony is people misunderstood what he meant. King, at his core, was a minister. And so when he was talking about redistribution of wealth, he wasn't talking about taking from the top 3% and giving to the bottom 97%. He was saying from a moral perspective, it is unethical. It lacks integrity. It is not sustainable to have a nation and a world where the rich have so much and the poor have so little." He was talking about it in a holistic sense, this concept of a redistribution of wealth. And he was shot and killed. But the Bible said, where there is no vision, the people perish. You cannot extinguish a light that was not lit by man. And so I would argue that we've had a wilderness period in this country for 40 years, since Dr. King's death. And last year, Ambassador Andrew Young, who was a lieutenant to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we had lunch, and after about an hour of lunch, I said, "You know, this guy really is underwhelmed by me." He was looking at his watch and fiddling with his papers. And right when I figured that I just wasn't smart enough or good enough or bright enough, he said, "What are you doing right now?" And I said, "Well, I'm completely free." He said, "Well, why don't you come to my office and let's continue our discussion." We had a 7-hour lunch. On the right arm of Ambassador Andrew Young, I call him our domestic Nelson Mandela, an incredible human being. And he said to me many things, but one of the quotes I remember was, "John, Dr. King and I integrated the lunch counter, the public building, the schoolhouse, but never the dollar. And the capitalism in a capitalist society with no true access to capital is nothing more than a sophisticated form of slavery." And then he said something that almost made me cry. He said, "You know, King always said that America cannot survive a desolated island of poverty surrounded by a sea of immense wealth. And that Dr. King would be proud that you're continuing his work and his march to end poverty in America." I don't know about you, but that did it for me. That's all I needed. You couldn't pay me more. You couldn't compensate me more than the feeling I got that day. But PhDs are good, PhDs are better. So I enrolled Ambassador Andrew Young in our mission. He's now our national spokesman for our work. And on April 12th of this year, just last week, Ambassador Young and I gathered in Atlanta and brought together the civil rights leaders and the silver rights leaders and a bipartisan group of government leaders under the theory that there's time for a new movement in America. That if the 20th century was marked by race and the color line all over the world and what we call civil rights, and the first civil right was the right to vote, then the 21st century is going to be marked by issues all over the world of class and poverty, or what I call silver rights. And the first silver right is financial literacy. Because if you don't know better, you cannot do better. You know, there's not a welfare mother in this country in her right mind that does not want her child to grow up to be successful, intelligent, hardworking, and taxpaying, and for no other reason than to feel proud of them. But you can't give what you don't have. In a blind town, a one-eyed man's king. If you don't know better, you cannot do better. There's an old Southern saying, "No matter how much I love you, my son or my daughter, if I don't have wisdom, I can only give you my own ignorance." Out of love, we pass down bad habits from generation to generation. I'm also suggesting that there's a difference between being broke and being poor. Being broke is an economic condition. You take any risk in life, you've been there before and you'll probably be there again. To be broke is a temporary economic condition, but to be poor is a disabling frame of mind and a depressed condition of your spirit, and you must vow never, ever, ever to be poor again. My pastor, Reverend Murray, told me this. It's not what people call you. It's what you answer to that's important. But never, ever, ever answer out of your name. And then I followed. To argue with a fool proves there are two. And so the first lesson has to be that if I don't like me, I can't like you. If I don't love me, I'm not gonna love you. If I don't respect me, I'm not gonna respect you. And if I don't have a purpose in my life, I'm gonna make your life a living hell. Ladies and gentlemen, we're all in this together. We're all bound up in the same mission. In 1965, the issue was love and hate. It was what we call racism. Today, the issue is not love or hate, it's indifference. People don't care enough to hate you in 2005. And the failure of the war on poverty can be encompassed in something called the gated community. People have moved up, moved out, said, not my problem, can't solve it, and have moved away. For the last time I checked, according to Deepak Chopra, we're not human beings having a spiritual experience, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. We're all interconnected. The mayor, former mayor of Dallas, Ronald Kirk, once said, you can take no pleasure from the fact that there's a hole in my end of our boat. Okay. And so, who gathered in Atlanta? The great Dr. Dorothy Knight and Secretary Jack Kemp and the Reverend Joseph Lauer and FDIC Chairman Donald Powell and SEC Commissioner Paul Atkins and ING CEO Tom McInerney and H&R Block Chairman and CEO Mark Ernst vowing to evolve and ultimately become an industry leader even in the revolution of this thing called refund anticipation loans. And the NAACP director Hillary Shelton, the administrator for the SBA, and a list of leaders that goes on and on and on. What's the point? The point is that we're not just in a meeting, we're not at a conference, and you're not people running a nonprofit. That whether you like it or not, you're stuck right here in the middle of a movement in America. Whether you know it or not. Let me make the case in the next few minutes and see if I can compel you to join the movement. But let me tell you the good news. The good news is that we're living in an economic era. America's the largest economy in the world today. And diversity has always been a business strength. And the fight between the states, the southern and the northern states, people say, well, that's a fight around racism and discrimination and to end slavery. No, it wasn't. Nobody went to war to save my black rear end. You know why they went to war? I saw somebody in the back doing just like this. Because the economy goes through four stages. The agricultural age, the industrial age, the technology age, and the information age. The South was in the agricultural age using free labor. The northern states were involved in the industrial age, import, export, finance, industrialization, manufacturing, and the North was diversifying. An Italian would come to the equivalent of Ellis Island, look south and see blacks catching heck, look north and see diversity, look south again and say, I'm not black, but I test my luck, and head north. And ultimately what you had was a clash between the old economy of the South and the new economy of the North, and the Civil War is about the South resisting Northern economic domination. And which model worked? It was a diverse model. Let's look at 2005. The only nation in the world where every race of people is within our borders is the United States of America. The most prosperous economy in the entire world is the United States of America. The two largest economies in the U.S., California and New York. the two most ethnically diverse places in the United States of America, California and New York. And I know what some of you are saying right now. There was an earthquake. The world tilted to one side, all the nuts rolled to California, but it is still the fifth largest economy in the entire world, and it is my home. Where is the 10th largest economy in the entire world? Los Angeles County. 170 different ethnic groups. The largest population of Koreans outside of Korea. The most Chinese Americans in Southern California than any place else outside of China. You cannot do business with people you don't reflect, respect, and understand. I didn't say the 10th largest economy in the U.S. or in the Western Hemisphere. I said in the entire world. Now the bad news. The number one cause for divorce in America is money. More people filed for bankruptcy in 2002 than graduated from college. The largest economy in the entire world, and who's teaching our children life 101 skills? The basis of checking, savings, credit, investment, and the history of financial service. I'm not talking about rocket science. I'm talking about basics. How does that translate? According to the Federal Reserve, 70% of our economy, I'm sorry, 80% of our economy is on the back of the U.S. consumer. That's you and me buying everything from coffee to breakfast to airline tickets to a mortgage for your home. 80% on the back of the U.S. consumer, but who's teaching us financial literacy? I even told the President of the United States when I met with him in January, Mr. President, I think that your ownership society on basis is a good idea, but how can you ask me to manage my Social Security account if I cannot manage my own checking account? And he listened. I can promise that they will, in fact, include financial literacy as a stepping stone to any sort of reform around Social Security. When you're being run out of town, get in front of the crowd and make like a parade. Do you know that thank you for the charity laugh, man. Do you know that according to the Wall Street Journal, 70% of all Americans are living from paycheck to paycheck? I didn't say 70% of black folks or brown folks. I said 70% of everybody. The only difference is when mainstream America has a headache, black and brown folks have pneumonia, but we are all sick. But let me translate that. If you're living in New York, California, or any major city, and you're making less than $50,000 a year, you are struggling just to make ends meet. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Middle class, 40 years ago, was one parent working. One parent stayed home as a domestic engineer and raised your children. The parent that was working with back, not brain. Today, middle class is two parents working. It's brain, not back. Popular culture is raising your children, and you are not making any more money. We live in a barbell economy. The rich are getting richer, the poor seem to be getting poorer, and it is harder to be middle class. Let me go one step further. The fastest growing group of bankruptcy filers are youth between 18 and 24. Ladies and gentlemen, those are not black kids, unfortunately. Those are not brown kids. Those are middle class white college students getting a master's degree in psychology, an undergraduate degree in bankruptcy, paying for their pizza with a credit card, believe a check is a form of credit, and are calling home to you for more money. What I'm suggesting is this is everybody's problem. That this era, this economic era we're living in, is affecting everybody in the same way. And this civil rights movement is everybody's movement. Those people are your people. Let's make matters worse. Black America is the only modern race of people in the world today that created a political power base before we created an economic one. And therein lies all of our problems. That's a whole nother speech. But that is something for you to think about. Any of you who are working in black and brown communities understand we created a political power base before we created an economic one. And if you also want to understand, where does the cynicism come from?
Where does it come from? Because we're not skeptical, we're cynical, and there's a difference. Because cynicism lacks hope. And all that goes back to 40 acres and a mule. And the broken promise. Until, frankly, the Bill of Rights Act of 1965. The first power we got was political power. Not to be blamed for riding the first horse that came along. But the reality is we're a democracy rooted in capitalism. And so we have been doing all the right things in all the wrong ways. And so where are we today? In 1992, we had a riot in Los Angeles. I didn't believe discrimination existed. Because I said, look at me. I grew up in Compton, California, South Central LA. My mom and dad never finished high school, but two of the smartest people I ever met in my life. If I could do it, I said anybody can do it. You want to make God laugh, tell him your plan. A Jewish friend of mine who worked for me told me, you know, John Bryan, not everybody is a John Bryan. I'm not giving you a compliment. Not everybody had a mother who told him that he was loved every day of his life. Not everybody had a father who owned his own business for 53 years, made a payroll out of his front door. So when I started my first business at age 10, people asked me, how could you do that thing? And if my response was, it never dawned on me that I couldn't, because I saw my father do it. It wasn't rocket science, it wasn't a black principle, it wasn't a brown principle, it wasn't a white principle, it was a human principle. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I was never poor, but I was broke on occasion. But I believed in me because my mama told me to. Fast forward to 1992. I didn't believe there was going to be a riot at Rodney King because I figured this is America, and you know, this is a just system, and we don't have laws of men, but we have laws comprised of the legal system, and then we had this verdict that was not guilty down the road, and I remember saying to myself, sometimes you don't have justice, you have just us. And sometimes to rationalize is to tell rational lies. And so out of guilt, I went out and started Operation Hope. Now, let me lay another truth on you. Movements very rarely start out of somebody who just wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to do something great. You cannot have a rainbow without a storm first. Who woke up in the morning and decided, I'm going to start a cancer foundation? You know who starts cancer foundations? Survivors and survivors' families and survivors' friends. The lady who started Mother Against Drunk Driving started because her little girl had been killed by a drunk driver. And so I started Operation Hope out of guilt. We're not showing up in my own community. For blaming poverty on the poor. For moving up and moving out. 1992, Beth mentioned to you, we had a $61,000 budget, one employee, and a vision to change the world and to eradicate poverty, and everybody laughed at me and said it would never work. If you want to make God laugh, as I said, tell him your plan. Today, we have an $8 million operating budget, 80% funded by the private sector. We're in 12 states, 16 cities, and the District of Columbia. We have 250 banking, insurance, corporate, credit union, and financial service partners with $3.6 trillion in assets between them. We have 100 CEOs serving on 10 boards of directors. We believe in the three-legged stools of hope: government, community, and the private sector working in partnership and in collaboration. With regard to government, we believe in a bipartisan approach, because you cannot eradicate poverty on partisan lines. Now, Beth mentioned to me that last year somebody mentioned President Bush and blah, 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 and it wasn't, quote, well received. I don't know what that means. Let me tell you what my belief system is. My belief system is he's the president. And last time I checked, we only have one at a time. My community's in a crisis. I don't really care whether you're black or white, rich or poor, Republican or Democrat, conservative or liberal. If you want to help me eradicate poverty in my community, you are my friend. And if you don't, you're just wasting my time. If the President of the United States calls you and wants to come visit your community, your only question should be, what time? And so in 2002, we hosted two presidents in 1 week. Our first black president, President Clinton. And a week later, President George W. Bush.
And you know what? I found that he was much nicer than his commercials by his detractors have suggested. In fact, he even partnered with President Bush. In fact, I am a presidential appointee, and I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I don't even belong to a political party. I belong to the Get It Done party. Can we get it done? Because the people in our communities don't care what race you are. They want to know, can you make them a homeowner? Can you make them a small business owner? Can you help them live their dreams? Can you get out of your own way long enough to help themselves? A Japanese mentor of mine told me, John, the whole purpose of life is to become transparent to God's will. Whew! How do you do that, I said. Learn to get out of your own way. How often? Every single day. If you want to eradicate poverty, you got to do more and better than just doing well by doing good. You've got to be passionately committed to making a difference, because you're going to be put in uncomfortable situations where your personal sense of insult is raging inside of you. What do you think was going through Dr. King's mind when he was sitting there talking to the governor of Alabama who was spitting in his face? Over mess, not it. Let's make sure we don't just win the battle and lose the war. I'm on record as saying I hate check cashing, as an example. I think check cashing is a morally reprehensible business. Every customer you educate is every customer you lose. We bought a check cashing in 2008. Why? Because you can't beat it. Bye. And who do you think Jesus Christ hung around? Pimps and prostitutes and pervert. Illicit human beings and individuals. I mean, he hung around interesting people because a saint is a sinner that got up and said, where do we go from here? 600,000 people went to Nick's check cashing in South Central Los Angeles per month. I'll repeat that for those who are moralists in the audience saying, how could it? 600,000 people with the next check cashing in South Central Los Angeles per month. And across the street from next check cashing half the time, no, the bank. As I said, there's a difference between being broke and being poor. And so, you can moralize about this all you want. People are making an informed, in most cases an uninformed decision to go to next check cashing across the street. So what do we decide to do? We partnered with Union Bank of California, a $40 billion bank in California, and agreed to buy a 45% interest in the largest and most ethical check casher in South Central LA. He charges 1%, and then what we agreed to do is if somebody opened a savings account, they'll cash your check for free. And so we got them out of the check cashing business and into the conversion business, converting check cashing customers into banking customers, using the power of financial literacy and economic education. And we said, don't give us a grant, give us 5% ownership in the new venture, doing well by doing good. I didn't want anybody to suggest that we were on the take or we had somehow been bought off. I didn't want greenlining coming after me. My friends at the Greenlining Institute, it's an inside joke. So. What do we do? We partnered together, and they took 40% interest, we took 5% interest, and we provided a real service of the grease that oils the gears of economic empowerment, which is financial literacy. And so you say, what are the results today? 40,000 accounts opened last year at Union Bank of California in 6 states. 4,000 deposit accounts opened in South Central Los Angeles by us, converting a check cashing customer into a banking customer. And there was 1 million ATM transactions last year at Union Bank of California in 37 locations of Nick's check cashing. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you cannot have a ATM transaction without a bank account. Moving people up and out of poverty. Now this model is being replicated all over the country, doing well by doing good. But when we did this, everybody said we were crazy and they were right. Everybody said it wouldn't work and they were wrong. When there is no vision, the people. And so we also decided, you know, there are no bank branches in these in these communities, and we're committed to this work of conversion, converting a check-cashing customer into a banking customer, converting a renter into a homeowner, converting a small business dreamer into a small business owner, converting a minimum wage worker into a living wage worker with new job skills, moving people up and out of poverty, not killing them with speeches and words and voices that cannot change their lives. And so we went and saw there were no bank branches. We didn't go peek at the bank and say, why, you didn't put any bank branches there. We went and did it ourselves. And in 2002, we became the first nonprofit in history to build a bank branch and sell it to a bank. A hope center is a cross between a bank branch and a Kinko's for empowerment. One-stop shopping for changing your life. When you walk in the front door, there's a sign on the wall that says, no loans denied. Because people are more poor than they are broke. They don't have hope. They get up and go as got up and went. And so when you walk through the front door, the first thing we do is give you your dignity back. And so then with your authorization, we pull your credit report and, oh, baby. Looks like a bus accident, but okay. We then give you credit counseling and financial planning and dollar-for-dollar matching grants and financial CPR if we have to. And in over 18 months, we move your FICO score 100 points. You start with no down payment, and you end with a $10,000 down payment because we match you dollar for dollar. Where the grants come from? Banks. Why? Because banks are spending $3,000 to $5,000 to market to acquire new long-term customers, and you've got them right in front of you. You can do well by doing good. You can give them CRA credit, a tax exemption. You can make them a hero and a shero in that community, and they get a first cut at the mainstream non-predatory loan you're going to create by having an educated borrower. So after 18 months, we move that FICO score 100 points. We do thick file underwriting, copy the utility bills, copy the rent statements, copy the phone bills, all forms of credit, I might add. If you're paying an auto insurance premium and you're not making one payment a year, you're making multiple payments, you're paying a loan. Sorry to depress you. Because the insurance company's not in the loan business, folks. They're in the insurance premium business. So they have taken that paper, bundled it, sold it to Wall Street, and are just simply doing a pass-through of your payment. So your payment has an interest rate attached to it, and you don't even know it. So we want to document all this, what we call alternative documentation, alternative credit, and give you credit for it, even though your electronic credit report does not do that. By the time we finish with you, you are low-hanging fruit for every bank in town. Do you know we funded $130 million in loans, converting check-cashing customers into banking customers, and then a renter into a homeowner? And in 11 years, we've made 1,000 homeowners and small business owners, and not one home loan has ever gone bad. And now we build a hope center in that third world country right outside of Washington, D.C. called Anacostia on Good Hope Road. And we've now challenged banks. These are not black communities. These are not brown communities. These are underserved communities. There are emerging markets in America, and they are viable. You know, the largest condiment seller in the nation used to be ketchup for decades. It's now salsa. Go figure. I tell my black brothers and sisters, you better learn to put some salsa on your barbecue. And I don't know why we're hating on our Latino brothers. I mean, what do you think Puerto Rican is? If not too Spanish to be black and too black to be Spanish. We're all in this thing together. Now, the greatest challenge, but to me, common sense. We've decided that there shouldn't be hope centers in inner city communities. In fact, we should run ourselves out of business. Because when you go to a community where you live, you don't have a hope center. You have a Bank of America branch, or a Wells Fargo branch, or a Wachovia branch, or a Citigroup branch. Is that correct? So in 5 years of us building this marketplace up, we should be replaced by a traditional bank that purchases our location, gets us out of the hard banking business. We'll move to the soft banking business, credit counseling, financial planning, dollar-for-dollar matching grants, all of the grease on the gears that allows that economy to grow doing well and doing good. Doing well by doing good. We've now served 500,000 people. 16,000 people a month come through our locations. We've educated 147,000 children in financial literacy, teaching children checking, savings, credit, investment, and the history of banking, with 2,500 volunteer Hope Corps members, kind of an urban Peace Corps, teaching children financial literacy, because if you don't know better, you cannot do better. But I've only begun. Here's my five-year goal. We'll educate 5 million children, urban children, in financial literacy. We will fund $1 billion in low-wealth home ownership. We will recruit 25,000 of you to go into classrooms to teach financial literacy. We will recruit 1,000 of America's leading companies to join our movement. And we'll become a household name in this country around financial literacy, economic education, and poverty eradication. And last but not least, we will spark a movement in this country, a movement around civil rights. Don't let anybody tell you that you cannot do great things. Don't let anybody diminish your dreams or tell you that you cannot succeed and change the world. You know, people will say you're crazy. They said that Nelson Mandela was crazy, and Martin Luther King Jr., and Mother Teresa, and Cesar Chavez. They were crazy. Crazy enough to believe that one person could change the world. Wasn't Martin Luther King Jr. crazy to walk with Jews? They had more than a theological disagreement about a man named Christ. Wasn't he crazy to talk to the people who disagreed with him, to keep calling even though folks hung the phone on the other side? Or did he have more in common with the folks who were marching with him than he had issues and areas of disagreement? I mean, didn't the Hindus and the Muslims and the Catholics and the Jews, didn't they all believe in something larger and more important than themselves? I mean, last time I checked, probably, you know, God does not have a self-esteem problem. You can call him whatever you want. Let him sort it out. Wasn't Nelson Mandela out of his cotton-picking mind? You're going to go to jail, an angry man, at 47. You're going to stay there 27 years. You're going to proclaim you're going to become the first black president of apartheid South Africa. You're going to come out, hug your jailer, become the first black president of apartheid South Africa. Turn around and make your jailer your vice president. One person can make a difference. Are you that one person? You can do well by doing good, ladies and gentlemen. That's what you're here to talk about, as I understand it. Isn't that right? I'm sorry, from the black church. Isn't that right? But just make sure as you travel along this path, you don't do too good or you don't do too well. What I mean by that is, if you do too good, then you'll have sympathy and not empathy. You become, like government has become sometimes, a mattress and not a springboard. People don't want a handout. They want a hand up. Or you could do too well. Unfortunately, this audience does not look like the communities I come from. You got to work harder to connect and to stay authentic and to stay passionate about your work and not make sure that you don't make so much money, you don't do so well that you forget about your mission. Constructive friction is what every good marriage is made of. If you ever lose your way, I want to just leave you with this story. You don't get any credit from God for being a nice person, for being pleasant, for smiling. You know, it takes 35 muscles to frown and 7 muscles to smile, but people are experts at being miserable. You don't get any credit for putting food on the table or raising your children or paying for the mortgage that has a roof and walls that surround your family. You don't get credit for any of these things because these are things you're just supposed to do. I remember Chris Rock, the comedian, once said, a guy walked up to him and said, well, I ain't never been to jail. You're not supposed to go to jail. That's a guy who wants credit. It's amazing how Many of us want credit for doing the things we're just supposed to do. Last time I checked, you only got credit for helping other people. And I don't know about you, but I want a spiritual platinum card with no limit on it. That's why I have time. Do I have 2 more minutes? When you go back to your communities, and I've talked about this issue of passion so much, I just don't understand why people are not passionate. I don't understand why people just sit there like bumps on a log. I don't understand it. What are we waiting for? What are we waiting for? You're not going to be excited about this. You're not going to be excited about today. You're not going to be passionate about what you're doing. What are you taking up space for? What are we here to do if not make a difference? You know, there are 3 types of people and there are 3 types of birds. There are eagles, there are buzzards, and there are turkeys. And eagles don't fly in packs. You've never seen a flock of eagles. And eagles are high altitude birds. There's a certain dignity to an eagle, a certain regalness and elegance to an eagle. An eagle's nest is even made differently. An eagle's nest has sharp little twigs. You know what the message is? Kind of like your message. If you get big enough, you push it up against the inside of that nest, you better get up and go get a job. Talk about you 48 years old living with your mama. And then you've got buzzards. Buzzards are low altitude birds. Buzzards love packs. Buzzards are always stepping on somebody else's head to elevate themselves. Buzzards are always player hating, never player congratulating. Always got something negative to say about somebody. Well, who does he think he is? Why is he up there? Well, I'm smarter than him. You probably are smarter than me, but I got the mic. So, and then you've got the worst kind of bird. The worst kind of bird is a turkey. Because a turkey's got wings and can't even fly. All they do is profile. Try to be something they are not. Translation, parking your leased Cadillac on the front lawn of your rented apartment building. Okay, I'm done. I hope that something I've said today has moved you in some way. If I've offended you in any way, blame it on my head, not my heart. I didn't want to come to you with prepared remarks. I wanted to come to you with a passionate message. A message that I believe in the depth of my soul, that each one of us here has been put on this earth with a definitive mission and message and an opportunity to change the world. If you don't do anything else to change the world in your environment, in your family, on your block, you have done more than most people. And if anybody complains to you, say, I like what I'm doing much better than what you're not doing. But as you leave here today, remember this. Watch how you live your life. It may be the only Bible that anybody else reads. May God bless.